Blog Talk.
Good evening. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
We're here because there be pirates out there.
Arrgh.
Good evening.
Hey, hello, Bill. Tracy, how the heck are you, lady?
We're shy of dog.
Oh, man.
Galoop took a galoop yesterday, and we have not seen him since.
Oops.
So we have been doing a significant amount of wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
CJ and I were out of the house yesterday.
Yeah.
Late last night. It was actually, we went to see a movie.
Cool.
And Victoria was home and tried to let one of the dogs out to go to the bathroom. And Ollie bolted for the door and threw it wide open and ran out into the night.
You might check around and see if there are some lady dogs around.
Well, he'd be humping time.
Yes, indeed.
But we've spent probably about 3 hours, wandering around. I would say within a mile of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And within a mile of the house, there's probably about 1,000 homes.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, it's a pretty significant set of neighborhoods and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
right.
No sign.
Hmm.
He hasn't been turned into the Humane Society yet.
Okay.
I've got some stuff up on Craigslist. All to no avail at this point.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Yep.
In the meantime, he's out gallivanting.
Yep.
Sowing his wild oats, I'm certain.
I'm positive.
And if he returns, he returns. If he does not,
yep.
So say, sarah.
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to get all bent out of bumper shape because, animals are born to be wild sometimes.
Yeah, they are.
And if he survives, he survives. He'll do it on his own wits.
Yeah, that's right. And hopefully he has some.
Yeah. No.
Nope. Okay.
he's 1 year old and hormones are kicking in.
Mm-hmm.
He's galoop. What can I say?
Yeah,
anyways, we got a lot of stuff to go on to get
done
with tonight. I've got a whole stack of stuff that I want to cover.
Cool.
But I'm going to start off doing something. I don't know how long I'm going to keep. I'd like to be able to keep doing this for a long period of time. I don't know if I should do it at the beginning or the end. I have acquired a significant quantity of Jefferson stuff.
Oh.
And in some of my readings, I came across a large collection of quotes that I'm kind of interested in sharing.
Mm-hmm.
Should I do it before or at the end? What do you think?
Actually, I don't care. I mean, if go ahead. I'm good.
It might suggest it. You know what? What I'll have to do. And so I'll think about what it is that I want to talk about, and I'll see if I can get a quote that fits into that particular mindset. But in the meantime, this is what I found. And it'll actually tie in. Under the pursuit of happiness.
Oh, yeah.
Now remember, I didn't say this. This is a quote from Thomas Jefferson. So don't make all get hung up on the second word.
Okay.
If God has made it a law in the nature of man to pursue his own happiness, he has left him free in the choice of place as well as mode. And we may safely call upon the whole body of English jurists to produce the map on which nature has traced, for each individual, the geographical line which she forbids him to cross in the pursuit of his happiness. So, in keeping with our thinking, let us move on. Healthcare.
Oh.
All right. Let's kill this puppy dead. All right? They were talking today about the idea that how many, little iterations this healthcare reform has gone. It's healthcare reform, health insurance reform. It's the public option. It's not the public option. It's co-ops. Okay.
Yeah.
Look, we need to just say done, dead,
yep.
Kill it. It doesn't need to be even in existence anymore. We're not interested in variations on a theme. We're not interested in on making it a little bit better or adjusting it here. Just kill it. Dead. Done.
Amen. Yeah.
No more
of
this crap. If you want to do health insurance reform, there's lots of times where those suggestions have been made and killed. And let me say, the GOP has been as quick to kill some of them as the Democrats.
Absolutely.
Okay. One, tort reform.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I have
some of my issues about it, because
yep.
I think if someone does gross negligence and it ruins somebody's life, I don't want some artificial cap coming in at $250,000. When you might have somebody that was earning $50,000 a year and they're 35 years old and they're done for their working career because of some doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? An artificial cap in that situation is ludicrous. Of course, $250,000 for spilling coffee onto your lap?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
There's a place and a time, and tort reform needs to be addressed. We can debate about all the specifics, and that's fine.
Yes.
Okay. This is going to carry. The second item on my list is going to carry through to the second big item on my list. Okay. Medicare sinkhole. Okay. We need to just kill this son of a bitch right in its tracks. Done. Get rid of it.
Yes. And I'm on Medicare, folks.
With some reasons to deal with things. I understand it's not something that can happen overnight. It's probably not even something that can happen over a decade. But it's something that needs to happen.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cross-border insurance. I think it's really ridiculous. Could you imagine a Ford dealership saying, you're from Indiana, I can't sell you a car.
Exactly.
If you live in Illinois, or somebody from California can't go into Las Vegas and go, hey, I like that car, I want to buy it. Sorry, you're from California, you can't. That's ridiculous. Okay?
Exactly.
Part of the problem is because of mandates.
Each state
has its own mandates. Now, here's the deal. Federal government, you can't tell the states that they're going to have mandates. Okay? Understand that. Federal government, you can't tell the states what mandates they can or can't have. Okay? You states, you morons, you idiots, get rid of the god...
Yes.
Get rid of the mandates.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
Let people pick and choose what they want to pick and choose.
Exactly.
Okay? No government-funded health care.
Actually, there was an interesting thing on Twitter about that today.
Well, there is an exception.
Okay.
Military.
Yep.
Military needs to have their medical care. The veterans need to be taken care of. That's an obligation we as a people, as a society, bear. So I'm okay with that particular side.
Yep. The issue that I saw on Twitter and also on a blog, and frankly I don't remember which one at this point, but nevertheless, is that people talk about health care as a right. But healthcare is a commodity. It's not a right. It's a commodity. There is no other commodity that we say, there's a right. And when you start thinking about healthcare from that point of view, it all starts to fall in place. this is about a private contract between me and somebody, a corporation, usually, but wouldn't have to be. I mean, you know, I could contract with George Soros, I suppose, if I wanted to. He's got the bucks to back it up. And say, hey, for X number of dollars a month, I would like to purchase an ability to have my doctor bills, my hospital bills, my pharmaceutical bills taken care of. Now, a pool of one doesn't really give you a lot. But if you have a pool of millions, all of a sudden the law of large numbers comes into play and you can pretty accurately define exactly what your liability when you're the corporation or George Soros. You can pretty accurately define what your liability is going to be, and therefore you can set what that premium needs to be. There needs not be any government involvement in that. None whatsoever. I will, as a consumer, I will say, well, let's see, you want to charge me this much, but you don't want to cover this, this, and this. Gosh, thanks. That doesn't sound really great. I think I will go find somebody else. Or you can say, gosh, you're going to cover all of this for only this much? Yeah, I'll buy that. But that is a purely private and personal decision on my part. The government has no function in it.
That's kind of my problem with that.
Okay.
I don't necessarily disagree with the premise. We talked about premises last week. I don't necessarily disagree with the premise. Here's my issue. Okay? Let's say that you and I, I'll make you younger and me a little bit older.
Okay.
Okay? Both of us in excellent health, 60 years old.
Okay.
Walk into exactly the same insurance company. Both of us have exactly the same general lifestyle. Both of us have exactly the same general income and wealth distribution. Both of us have generally the same educational background and work experience.
Okay.
Okay. And you walk in on Monday, they look at you, they rate you, and say $1,000 a month. For whatever reason.
Yep, whatever.
I walk in on Tuesday, and they rate me for $1,400 a month.
Okay.
Okay. Now, the question I would have is, why is there a distinct difference between you at $1,000 and me at $1,400?
And why would that be?
Good question. The only way to know why that would be a difference is to have a little bit of transparency in the process. Okay.
Okay.
Little bit of transparency in the process. Because on occasion, it has been said, known and shown and otherwise proven, okay, that some companies discriminate based on, I don't know, color, proclivities, religion. And those are not necessarily issues that affect risk. They can be. If I being who I am and you being who you are, both of us being 60, we're going to get rated differently simply because you're a man and I'm a woman.
Okay.
There are slightly different risk scenarios, even if everything else was taken care of.
Exactly.
So I understand that. That's fine. Okay, but there are certain other aspects that are not there. So there's got to be a certain amount of transparency. So I think a government saying there has to be a certain amount of transparency is a reasonable point to add to that premise. And maybe that's a detail that we don't need to get into too much, but, you know, I'm not a libertarian. There's a place and a time for government. That might be one of them. Might be.
My point of disagreement will be, if all of the insurance companies are making that same distinction, then it is most probable that they are making that based on their experiences. If they
some verifiable, transparent point of view that says under those conditions the difference is warranted.
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is, if you have purely private transactions, and if a segment of the market is being overcharged, somebody is going to jump in there and say, you know what, I can make a profit and do that for less.
I'm almost in agreement with you.
Yeah, okay. That's fine.
Only because I do not believe in perfect market efficiency.
Yeah, there never is. There's always friction.
So, and because of that, there's some variations there. Okay.
But you know what? For me, just me personally, that friction is worth the price of not having government in it.
I understand that. That's a very good point. it's also going to, when that friction exists, it's going to, as you suggest, create a more competitive environment that's going to improve that efficiency. While it may not improve that efficiency for me,
mm-hmm.
over time, the marketplace will get closer to it.
Yep, it's not a perfect world.
It's not a perfect world. I'm perfect, but it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let's talk on just a little bit.
Okay.
This. So we have a general agreement on principles and stuff
yep.
like that with this. And the premise, I want to talk about two, not necessarily organizations. First of all, I want to talk about ARP.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
The aughts.
Yeah.
Okay.
They made a big miscalculation.
Yeah, big miscalculation, although I've been suggesting that they've been getting a little bit too big for their britches for a while now.
Yep.
You know, ARP has gotten to be pretty much like a union.
Yes, they have.
They think because they've got all the seniors in their pocket, they can pretty much dictate whatever they damn well please.
Mm.
Now, there's a certain disconnect on the idea that an association of people can have that kind of clout politically.
Yes.
I have said in the past, I don't think I've ever said it on the show, I've said in the past, I think that corporations need to lose their personhood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's going to get me into a whole realm of different things, but it's an issue that needs to be addressed at some point. Maybe we'll talk about it some night. About the
yep.
general idea of why personhood at a corporate level is a bad thing and really needs to be addressed in another way. All right. All of this, and with ARP getting they're going to get their heads handed to them maybe on this enough. Pharma, big pharma, has done exactly the same thing. You know, they've sold out their own industry in order to, you know, be on the side of, you know, evil. Have you ever read or seen The Lord of the Rings?
No, I have not. I know about it, and I know something about it simply because there's always been a lot of conversation about it, but I've never actually read it myself.
Good books to read. Interesting books to read. The movies were actually pretty good. But one of the characters in the book was called Grimer Wormtongue.
Oh, boy. Bet he had a heck of a time in grade school.
Yeah, Grimer Wormtongue was a sneaky little piece of work that became the advisor to a king, and he would whisper terrible, nasty things into the king's ear about whoever was coming in front of him, including
uh-huh.
eventually the sons of the king that the king then
Ooh.
Banished.
Uh-huh.
That's what pharma has done. They have become the Grimer Worm Tongue to Barack Obama's, you know, hideous king.
Mm-hmm.
They have whispered into the king's ear, you cannot trust us, so we will bend to your will if you give us this little crumb over to the side.
Right.
It is a betrayal, a clear betrayal, of their contract, their capitalistic contract that Republicans, conservatives have defended for a long time. You know, our pharmaceutical companies need to have their profits in order to bring out all these new products, and we've defended those products even when sometimes, you know, the profits were extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
We've defended their patents to allow them to do that, even when, you know, it meant that some people were not going to be able to afford the miracle drugs that were being presented because that process of capitalism. Well,
yes.
You know, pharma just betrayed that entire concept.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not willing to throw pharma under the bus, simply because all the reasons that we, you know, supported it and defended it are still true.
Yeah.
However, like ARP, they have gotten to the point where they are maybe a little bit too big for their britches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm considering this idea. I've not been anti-lobbyist. I think anybody should be able to hire someone and say, go talk to my congressman. I can't go to Washington. Maybe you can bend their ear over lunch and, you know, be able to say good things. Now, I don't oppose that in principle.
Right.
However, I'm much more concerned about a corporation that hires a lobbyist to benefit the corporation. This goes back to the idea of corporate personhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm beginning to feel like, you know, we need to do something to rein in that, and I'm not certain how to approach that.
You know, I'm not either, and I've had some conversations on that particular subject. One of the things that has come up in those conversations is, if you are a union, if you are a corporation, then you cannot write off any expenses that are attributable to lobbying. Now, that doesn't say you can't. It just says you aren't going to be able to write it off, folks. Now, that could be one approach. But anytime you start attacking that lobbying, then you are also attacking the ability of we the people to lobby.
Correct.
Because it becomes only a small step to say, well, if these people can't do it, then how come these people can?
Right, and that's been the big problem with McCain-Feingold is it's exactly that particular problem.
Yes.
You know, the idea that 60 days before an election you can't have, you know, issue ads naming specific candidates.
Exactly.
Well, you know, if I want to spend $10,000 and say that Tammy Baldwin, who is my representative, you know, has spent too much time in Congress not doing enough, and it's
mm-hmm.
time to go, you know, I want to be able to do that. And I don't want some government saying you can't spend your $10,000 to do that.
Exactly. It's your money.
You know, and if
you
I
want to be able to spend it the way you want to.
You know, if eight of us get together and come up with $10,000 and send somebody to Washington because we want, you know, the government to recognize, you know, American Conservative Party talk radio on Tuesday nights,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Then I want us to be able to do that.
Exactly. Yep.
So that's the problem. We are right. There's got to be a way to approach lobbying, and I'm almost considering the idea that, you know, corporate personhood is the issue that needs to be addressed in that regard.
And you know, and it could be. And incidentally, a point for those who are listening that don't know what it is that Big Pharma got for their sellout. And basically what they agreed to do is they agreed to spend up to $150 million on ads to promote the health care initiative by Congress and the President. And two, for that, they got an agreement that no one would be addressing reimportation of drugs. No one would be addressing their ability to slightly change a formula to keep a generic from coming on the market. Both of those are big dollar items to Big Pharma.
And, of course, Obama agreed that he wouldn't seek more than $80 billion in
yep.
cost reductions.
Yep, and that's $80 billion over the 10 years. not $80 billion a year.
Right.
Exactly.
All right. So that's that particular issue. Now, this all flows into the second item on my agenda for this evening, which is government reform.
Oh. Gee, let me see. We've had health care reform. We've had insurance reform. I don't recall anybody bringing up government reform.
Well, see, actually, I think you're wrong. Because I think
there's
a whole lot of people showing up at town halls that are asking exactly for that. Let me tell you a little story.
Okay.
And this will relate to politicians.
Mm-hmm.
We were in court. Victoria was in court with a client. A mortgage company had, maybe I have to do a little bit of background detail here. I got time to do this. All right, here's the deal. When somebody files bankruptcy and they're going to repay their debts, from the date that the bankruptcy is filed, everything gets reset.
Okay? Right.
So let's say you're 6 months behind on your mortgage, you file bankruptcy, you start making your mortgage payment as if nothing had gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, you're going to repay to a trustee those 6 months that you missed. The trustee is going to pay the mortgage company back that money over time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, the mortgage company has an obligation. It has to account for this money correctly. The payments that are coming in that you've restarted making have to be treated as on time.
Okay.
Even though theoretically you're 6 months behind because you're being careful. It has to be treated as if they're on time. And the 6 months that you're behind will be caught up over time as you make your additional payments to the trustee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in this particular case, the mortgage company was taking the money that the clients were paying, and they were applying it to the oldest payment due.
Ah.
Which meant that the payment was effectively late.
Mm-hmm.
And it accrued a late charge.
Yep.
Now, that is against the law as far as bankruptcy is concerned. And 6 months into the plan, the mortgage company called upon our client and said, "You're behind and we want out of the bankruptcy." And we said, "Are you crazy? Here we have six payments that the client has made, proof of it. Where do you think they're behind?" "Well, we've applied those payments to the past and they're behind." "You can't do that." "Well, that's the way we do things." Well, this got in front of a court. This got in front of a bankruptcy judge. And a vice president from this particular mortgage company appeared in court, actually by phone, with his attorneys in court, and defended his practice.
Really?
Despite the law. And he was called upon. The judge said, "You understand that that is not the way you're supposed to be doing it." And here's the response by the mortgage company. "Are you telling us we have to change the way we do business just because the law says so?" To which the judge said, "Yeah.
Dummy."
Okay. What we are saying to Congress critters that are appearing or not appearing at particular town halls is, "You represent us and you're going to do that." And they're saying, "Are you actually going to make us do what you want us to do?" And we're saying, "Yeah.
Dummy."
Right. All right. Now, somebody said something, and I agree with it, because I had a problem with this. Let's say that we have a certain Congress critter in Texas.
Okay.
Who stands in front of an audience of his constituents.
Mm-hmm.
And that congressman says, "I know that you don't like the war in Iraq, but I'm going to stand with the president and I'm going to vote for funding." And those constituents just are absolutely livid. Pitchforks, fires, they're going to hang them, tar and feathers.
Yep.
We as conservatives are going, a principled position. We should support that man. Right?
Yep.
So if he stands in front of a set of constituents and says, "I'm going to support health care reform because it is good for this country," shouldn't we be saying, well, there's a principled man, and we should be supporting that principled man? Just because he's not listening to the constituents at the time?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just because a congressperson refuses to listen to his constituents and instead votes on principle and holds a stand about doing the right thing, I don't think we can give him crap for doing that. Just because, you know, we supported them when they were doing it, when we liked what they were supporting, we should be equally supporting them when we don't necessarily like what they're supporting. Now, I will give you the opportunity to tell me why the two situations are not the same.
I make a distinction between have-tos and want-tos.
Ooh, that's interesting. I know
national,
where that's...
National security is a have-to. We can argue about what is in the nation in the nature of what is national security. But once the commander in chief has said, this is in our national security, and I am ordering our troops to thus and such a place, that debate is over. Congress can effectively veto that by withholding funding, which they didn't do, or they can go along with it. That is a case of this is a have-to. Want-tos are a different matter. You might want to have midnight basketball for all of the youth in the United States, but that's a want-to, not a have-to. And I think it is perfectly appropriate to chastise that elected official for what is essentially a frivolous undertaking. So that's the distinctions that I use. That is not necessarily to say others don't have other distinctions.
Well, I think my position is that I'm going to stand up for that congressman in Texas and say, I think that's a very principled position, and I think you should be applauded for standing up for those principles.
Mm-hmm.
And next year, I'm going to lecture your replacement that's going to hopefully stand on principle also, but I'm going to kick your butt out of that seat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a reasonable point of view, rather than say that they're not principled because they are not listening to their constituents, because we don't necessarily want them to listen to our constituents all the time. Because,
mm-hmm.
as I have said before, you know, the American people collectively, you know, got their heads up their ass sometimes.
And they're schizophrenic. They are. The American people are.
Sometimes they're wearing their ass on their heads, and sometimes they got their head up their ass.
For me, there is a distinction in that, though.
Okay.
And you can go back to FDR and Social Security. You can go back to Lyndon Johnson and the Great War on Poverty, and all of those things. And here is the distinction. The distinction is, once you put a social program in, good luck in ever getting rid of it.
Right.
We can cut the military. Oh, yeah, you betcha. We can cut essential services. Oh, yeah, you bet. Nah, I'm sorry. We just don't have the dollars to give to those policemen and firemen, et cetera, et cetera. Nah, we don't have enough dollars to fund that library. But by golly, we can dish money out to those people who are favored, which translates into who are my constituents. So once those programs are in, then you really don't have a lot of opportunity to get rid of them. So the only opportunity that you have is before they get in. And that, I think, is what is happening right now.
Kill it.
Yep.
Kill it.
Dead.
Dead, dead, dead. All right.
Yeah.
So my government reform is, and this is based on the principle that you and I talked about last week, this
yep.
premise, no Medicare.
No Medicare.
No Social Security.
Nope.
No HUD.
Nope.
No K-12 education.
Nope.
All of that is stuff that doesn't belong government doing.
That's right. Those are state functions at best.
Now, we can make all kinds of art. Now, somebody suggested to me when I said it was not unconstitutional, they said, well, go read the Supreme Court decision. You know what? And the Supreme Court decision says that the general welfare shall be construed as individuals, where the scope of the problem is national in size.
Mm.
So it is, quote, quote, according to the Supreme Court of the 1935s, constitutional for the government to get involved with individual problems when the scope is national in size.
Now, oh, and the Supreme Court never gets it wrong, right?
Well, and here's what the problem was. Roosevelt was going to assign an additional jurist to each Supreme Court justice that was over the age of 70 to take off some of the load.
Yep. I.e. pack the court.
And as it stood, five of the jurists were over 70 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the Supreme Court justice said to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court said to prevent that, they actually let some of the things go, and one of those things was Social Security, and he said, to his everlasting shame. Because it did give government the opportunity to step in to do things it was never supposed to have been done before.
Exactly.
It's never been allowed to do. But, he said, to protect the rest of the country from the damage that would be done to the Supreme Court, he did it.
Mm.
It was rather interesting reading that I spent some time last week on. You know, things that, you know, you're right. We have to make some changes, and it's going to take a long time, and it's going to have to happen. We're going to have to do it, otherwise, you know, we're going to have a hard time moving forward past these things.
Yes, we are.
Because they're going to constantly be coming back to haunt us, and they need to be addressed. I'm not certain how we can address them in a way that people will understand that it is not necessarily in any one particular individual's best interest to do so, but it is certainly in this country's best interest to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, and let's talk about politicians for a second, because somebody used the phrase MIA politicians, and yeah, it's happening.
Yeah.
Representative, Tammy Baldwin, decided to have a telephone town hall, invitation only, and due to a technical glitch, only four questions were asked.
No. Hmm.
Amazing. But she's done no in-person things. And, you know, what's really interesting about it and why she's being called out pretty hard on it was she campaigned at the beginning of her career on this health care issue.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She said she wanted to go to Congress specifically to work on healthcare.
Hmm.
And she's a huge big fan of single payer, and of course, this particular law is not. And so she's having to defend what she claimed to be indefensible before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, she's not. But I do have a problem with these MIA politicians. One of our senators, Herb Cole, has done a number of town halls. He's done it with private organizations.
Mm-hmm.
That you either have to be a member of that private organization or be invited by that organization in order to participate.
Mm.
As far as I know, Feingold has been completely missing in action. Nobody has seen or heard from him this month.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the one Tammy Baldwin one. But it's all over the country. You know, politicians are ducking left, right, and center. They do not want to get involved in this process. And frankly, you know, if you're not willing to talk to your constituents, I'm not willing to pay you.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, one of the interesting things that I have read lately is that some challengers to these entrenched politicians when they are not showing up for town halls is to hold the town hall with an empty chair on the stage and hold the town hall anyway. I think that's great.
Yeah,
shame them if nothing else.
They are talking about doing it here.
Yeah, good.
You know, and I certainly thought of the idea myself, you know, about 2 weeks ago, trying to figure out how to make it work. You know, in other words, you know, say here's the town hall, and then, you know, tell the representative, you're invited. But, of course, they would always say, well, we had prior commitments.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I'm trying to think about exactly what
schedule.
Prior commitments they have this month.
Yeah, right.
I'm just going to get my teeth cleaned, my
yeah,
hair
right.
washed, my
yeah.
laundry done, my...
Yeah.
Whatever.
And my pet's nails need clipping. Yes, indeed. Do you have anybody running? I mean, do you have any announced candidates against your rep?
Tammy Baldwin?
Yeah.
No, not as of this moment, as far as I'm aware.
Gee, that's too bad. They're missing a great opportunity.
So... You know, but she just got reelected, you know, 6 months ago, so we've got a little bit of a time frame here.
Is she a senator?
No, she's a congresswoman. I know, she gets yanked up again soon enough.
In 2010, yeah.
Yeah, she gets
Now is the time to be laying the groundwork.
So,
yep.
We'll see about that. But Feingold, I think, has got 4 years left in Feingold. I think he's got 4 years. No, he can't be four years.
Can't be. He's either got two or five and a half, one.
Yeah, I don't remember offhand.
Yeah.
Cole, I think, is going to quit at the end of this term. He's a millionaire. He's in his 70s.
Mm.
You know, I think he's going to give somebody else an opportunity to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly be nice. He's kind of a note, you know, of... placeholder at this point. I want to actually, believe it or not, want to get into this idea of climate change for a second.
Really? Okay.
and it's kind of along the ideas of, this is not a fully formed idea, so work with me on this a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. Climate change, if I understand them correctly, is a worldwide phenomenon, right?
But I think that you have to make a differentiation. I think you have to differentiate between climate change and anthropomorphic
No.
The
Earth is getting warmer. It's not just the northern hemisphere is getting warmer. It's not just the southern hemisphere. The whole Earth.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, for the purposes of the of trying to understand the issue, you do have to make the distinction.
All right. Well, no, because I, frankly, 100 years ago there was 4 billion less people breathing.
Yeah, well, okay. So,
we all produce carbon dioxide, and there's 4 billion more of us.
Yeah,
we're going to produce more carbon dioxide.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Now, the question will be whether that has actually any impact upon the planet or not.
Exactly.
Somebody says carbon dioxide has been going up this entire century. I'm like, there's 6 billion of us.
Yeah.
You want us to hold our breath? Okay. So, if this climate change is occurring globally, then either we can get everybody involved in doing something about it. In other words, 6 billion people decide that on Wednesday, August 19th at 12 o'clock, we're all going to hold our breath for 1 minute.
Yeah.
Or we're not.
Exactly.
You know, the United States cannot, in and of itself, change the climate.
Nope.
For better or for worse.
I agree.
You know, if Yellowstone does a super eruption, then you could blame the United States for what's going to happen. You know, theoretically,
I guess
people probably would.
Yeah.
You know, but what I was thinking about today was, if the United States cannot affect global change by itself, despite the accusations thereof, I mean, we can't change the planet getting warmer by ourselves.
Nope.
Can't do it.
Right.
Someone would say, but we have to try. And I'm sitting there like going, you know, if somebody, you know, stood up in the World Trade Center and said the ceiling is coming down, we have to try and hold it up. You know, okay, the person's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Stupidity in that particular point of view is a self-reinforcing set of consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't the same thing with global climate change? I mean, isn't the United States doing anything by itself, you know, collectively suicide? Now, of course, you're going to say, duh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think there's any argument there.
My question is, why?
Why what?
Why are we talking about it?
Oh, well, because it isn't really about global warming.
Okay.
At least I don't think it is.
This is where I want to go with this.
Okay.
Somebody comes up to you and says, I want to talk about global climate change. I basically am going to start responding with, why?
Yeah, exactly.
Why do we want to discuss this? What value is there to discussing this? Well, something has to be done, okay? But you and I are not going to do it, and nobody else around here is going to do it. Well, but that doesn't mean there's something that, yeah, that means exactly what it means.
Yep.
Nothing's going to be done about it. Why are
exactly.
we talking about it?
Exactly.
All right, that's where I want to go with that. Why? Why are we even talking about it? Because the only way that you can say that something can be done is that government's going to have to do it. And what did we say about government reform?
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, right.
No. No.
No.
All right.
Kill it. Dead.
All right, let's talk. I want to talk about conservatism for a moment.
Okay.
I'm abandoning you all.
Uh-oh. Look out. Tracy the Lib.
Now. Yeah. Okay. Frontal lobotomy time. Maybe might
yeah,
get me
right.
there.
Yeah, right.
A little bit of shock treatment.
Yeah, right.
Somebody beating me upon the head with a pipe. You know, I suggested that earlier with my quote of Jefferson that, you know, I really like Jefferson. The man had it on stick. He was, like, right on the money.
Yep.
Too many places to even think about the fact that, you know, if you want to say A, he was already there. If you want to say B, he was already there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I wanted to find out, was there any such thing as the Jeffersonians? There are, believe it or not.
Yes, there are.
They're just a little crazy. Just a little
A little
crazy.
Bit.
A little crazy. So I'm not really going in that. Yes, I am going in that general direction. But not quite that crazy. One of the things that somebody said was, well, one of the things that Jefferson said, and this is where he and I will depart ways for the moment, is that he believes that the farmer was the be-all, end-all of American society.
Yep, he was an agrarian.
As far as he was concerned, the best model of American citizenship was the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
And everything
and for
else
his time, he was right.
Yeah, and everything else was pretty much second fiddle.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't like merchants, he didn't like financiers, he didn't like manufacturers, which was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty much on the idea that farmers were like the epitome of the American citizen. And I suggested to somebody, well, you know, if you could take entrepreneurs and replace them with farmer,
mm-hmm.
I think Jefferson might be okay with that.
for a modern time, I think.
I think you might be okay with that. Because I don't think he understands the idea. Now, there are many family farmers, many individual family farmers.
Yes, there are.
But the majority of our food is produced by corporate farms.
Yes, they are.
So I don't think he would have appreciated the idea that the majority of our food being produced by what he considered to be financiers and merchants.
Probably true.
I think that would probably give him a little bit pause of concern.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to spend some more time thinking about it. And it's not because I'm looking to divest myself of the idea of the American Conservative Party. Although I am one of those people that says any party that wants me,
yeah.
I don't want to be part of them.
Yeah.
But seeing as how I actually was kind of involved in the starting of this, I really can't say
okay.
that, that's an appropriate position to take. And I'm not. And I think that the American Conservative Party has been very faithful to Jefferson.
For the most part, I think, yes.
Yeah, I think our principles have pretty well established in most regards on a Jefferson set of principles. I'm doing some more research, but I think in the long run I'm going to concede that we did a pretty good job of staying honest to those principles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I will, however, call us on a few points dealing with society at some other point in time.
Okay.
You suggested last week that we should do something, and we never got around to it because we ran out of time, and we have only about 8 minutes left, so we don't have lots of time to do it. But
okay.
I did want to talk about some things economic.
Okay.
Projection. 3 million foreclosures next year.
Doesn't surprise me.
We're over two. We're approaching 2.5 million. It's expected we'll hit about 2.5 million this year. 3 million next year. That's an amazing number.
Yes, it is.
An amazing number. Considering it was pretty normal to be in the 300,000 to 450,000 range just 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was considered a pretty bad year for foreclosures. Was 400,000.
Yes.
And we're approaching 7 or 8 times that number at this point. That's just an amazing amount of foreclosures. And somebody suggested that it's a tip of the iceberg because the projection is that sometime next year, 48% of all mortgages, 48% of all homes with mortgages will be underwater.
And I don't really doubt that much because right now it's at 32.5 or so percent.
48%. There is no reason in the world why a person who's that deep underwater would want to keep making their payments.
Exactly.
Did you hear the good news?
Yeah.
They project that all the option arms that are due to reset in the next 2 years,
yeah,
not as many of them are going to foreclose as they were predicting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the good news. Bad news is most of them are going to fall flat on their face before they ever reset.
I see. Okay. They won't reprice because they'll already be foreclosed on. Oh, boy. Oh, man. Yeah. That's good.
Projection. 2
yeah.
million bankruptcies.
For this year or next?
We're at 1.3, approaching 1.3 right now. It looks like we'll probably hit somewhere in the vicinity of 1.5 and a piece.
Ouch.
This year.
Yeah.
Are you beeping at me?
Hello?
No beeping at me. 1.5 million so far this year.
Yeah.
Next year, 2 million. 2 million bankruptcies.
Oh, boy.
And, what is it? Every 6 to 10 people that are unemployed turns out to be an additional bankruptcy.
Hmm.
Well, if we have 10 million unemployed, that's a million bankruptcies just on those unemployed alone.
Yep.
But let's talk about unemployment for half a second.
Okay.
You and I have predicted 10.0 unemployment between September and October.
Yes.
Probably going to fall short of that.
Yep.
Unless things are really dramatic in September. They could be. I don't think so. But that stupid 9.4, you know, probably should have been 9.6 or 9.7. Probably 9.6 would have been a more appropriate number.
Mm-hmm.
So we would probably be closer to 9.9. You know, I'd still probably be there. But that the drop to 9.4 was a stupid motion.
Mm, yeah.
I'm projecting at this point that we'll hit for the official number 10.6. That's where I think we'll be, 10.6 sometime March or April next year.
Hmm.
But U6, which is the larger number of unemployed, lower employed, partially employed, or just gave the fuck up,
mm-hmm.
unemployed, which is at 16.2 right now, I'm saying 21.1%. 21.1% under or discouraged or unemployed.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a big number.
We're not coming back from that anytime back.
Soon. No.
We're just going to be in a situation where it's going to last there.
Although, we can get back quicker than people realize and understand.
Yeah, but you know what? I would agree with you if we could just put away the mindset that debt is bad. I think people have finally started to get the idea that all of this debt is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to be less interested in taking on new debt, lots of new debt.
Yes, they are.
And without lots of new debt, we're not going to step up fast.
I have a little bit contrary view to that. I think if you put in policies in place that encourage entrepreneurship, that encourages job creation, that, in fact, we can get back quicker. I'm not saying it's easy, and I'm not saying it comes back as robustly as if the government had never been involved. But it will come back quicker than if government continues its current course.
Okay. That's possible. Okay.
Yep.
Enough pessimism here. I want to do what I've been told to do, which is to fire people up. Let's talk about healthcare for one more minute. We have that's about what we've got left.
Okay.
It's got to die.
Yes,
none
it
of
does.
This playing game stuff, none of this, you know, co-op stuff. You know, if you think for a second that anybody is currently interested in doing something that, you know, is remotely good as far as healthcare reform is concerned, and they are on the Democratic side or supporting this bill in any way, they're lying to you.
Yes.
30
Absolutely.
Seconds. Bill, feel free to shout out.
Okay. And that's my usual shout out to my CT buddies and Arkansas Traveler and Just Me Pammy and Louisa Ma and all of you folks. Thank you for listening. We appreciate the fact that you do. Give us a call sometime. Weigh in here. Go,
and
Tracy.
We want to thank all the listeners last week. We had a lot of them.
Yeah.
Bill, see you next week.
See ya.
Good night, everybody. Don't forget, pirates. Done.
All right. Gee, we almost need bumper out music.
Well, I started trying to do that, but
yeah,
it's hard to do.
It is hard to do, and it's hard to do because we always run right up to the last second there. Next week, I want to talk about rights some.
Ooh.
Just to give you a heads up.
You know, I have some particular things about that.
Cool. We can have a great conversation then.
Some other natural rights have not yet entered into any declaration of rights.
Ooh, hoo, hoo. And they aren't covered under that all rights not specifically mentioned are reserved to the states and to the people?
What is true of every member of society individually is true of them all collectively, since the rights of the whole can be no more than the sum of the rights of the individual.
Must be Burke.
No, this is all Jefferson.
That was Tom? Oh my goodness.
Under the law of nature, all men are born free. Everyone comes into the world with a right to his own person, which includes the liberty of moving and using it at his own will. This is what is called personal liberty, and it is given to him by the author of nature because necessary for his own sustenance.
Cool.
I was actually thinking about, you know, somebody used the idea of when you were starting to talk about healthcare right. They used the example of the right to move.
Hmm.
The right to change geographical location.
Not seeing the nexus, but okay.
That doesn't mean that you have the right to drive or the right to call upon somebody else to move you.
Ah, now that's true.
You know, if you want to move, feel free, but you can't tell other people to move you for you.
Exactly.
I thought it was a pretty interesting thing. I didn't get into it because it will actually probably play better into what we're going to discuss next week.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you that know, but that is a good thought.
Yeah.
You betcha. All right. Cool.
So, I mean, you know, Jefferson, you know, it is a significant quantity of stuff that I've come across.
Oh, man. Yeah.
2,700 quotes.
Those old guys, I mean, they had it down. Jesus,
yeah,
they had it down. God.
Yeah, you know, every time I think I've thought of something really good, I find something that Jefferson has already said about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, yeah.
You know, right. And as much as a deist as he might have been, it is clear he was agnostic.
Okay. Ask me if I care.
You know, because there's a lot of quotes in there,
yeah,
that he just rips into Christianity. Rips into Christianity. I mean, given the opportunity, he probably would have ripped into Islam just as much. I'm not suggesting that he was particularly picky about his anti-religious point of view. But let me tell you, he was anti-religion. Whoa! Not anti-God. Not
mm-hmm.
atheist.
Mm-hmm.
But anti-religion? Oh, yeah. As far as he was concerned...
But Tracy, there's a lot to be anti in turn if you talk about organized religion.
Oh, sure.
I mean, there's a lot to be anti. I mean, good grief. On the other hand,
he considered the tyranny of the mind by religion to be second only to the tyranny of the person by government.
Yeah, okay. If by that he means the tyranny of dogma, sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he is of by no stretch of the imagination anti-God.
Right. Oh, well, no. I mean, you know, he ascribes a whole lot and uses the term liberally.
Yeah, and, you know, so, you know, but he is, you know, as it, the God who gave us life gave us liberty
yep.
at the same time.
Exactly.
You know, the hand of force may destroy but cannot disjoin them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, he was a deist. There's no doubt about that. He was absolutely God-oriented.
I'm going to have to look up the dictionary definition. I have never been clear as to exactly what a deist is.
He just believed that there's a supreme power, a supreme God.
Okay.
He doesn't. A deist does not necessarily ascribe to any particular religion, other than to state that there is a supreme power, there is a supreme God, and doesn't ascribe to a particular set of beliefs that are associated with that.
Okay.
And most of the founding fathers were, in fact, pretty much along those lines. There were differences, but you know,
sure.
there were some that were, you know, seriously, you know, participants in various religions, but you know, mostly variations on Protestantism.
Hmm.
But yeah, but the deists were not associated with any church or religion. They did not disassociate from the idea of God. They were a firm believer in a supreme power, supreme God, but not oriented toward a particular religion. And, you know, they, for the most part, had problems with religion, you know, as our Constitution does.
Sure. Well, actually, I'm not so sure that our Constitution does, actually. I mean, basically, the only time that it treats with religion is in the First Amendment.
No, I would suggest to you that the idea that churches should get tax breaks would have just pissed them off.
Are we talking about Constitution or are we talking about government? Because they're two different things.
Constitutionally, I think that I think the Founding Fathers would have been pissed off the idea that churches got tax breaks.
And I don't have any problem with saying with agreeing with that. But that's a far cry from saying. And because of that, if you're in the public square, I'm sorry, you can't mention God.
Oh no. Yeah. No.
Yeah, okay.
No. There's no doubt that they believed that freedom to practice religion is by far the most important thing. Quote, "We have solved, by fair experiment, the great and interesting question whether freedom of religion is compatible with order in government and obedience to the laws. And we have experienced the quiet as well as the comfort which results from leaving everyone to profess freely and openly those principles of religion which are the inductions of his own reason and the serious convictions of his own inquiries."
Mm-hmm.
You know, the constitutional freedom of religion is the most inalienable and sacred of all human rights. I mean, you know, that's Jefferson, as far as you know, he was absolutely adamant about the fact that, you know, freedom of religion was an absolute.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
I'm certain that he would have exactly the same point of, you know, you can smoke that vile weed all day you want, you know, just don't do it in my house.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
You know, and isn't it ironic that it was his letter to I think it was a Jewish, whatever they call themselves, congregation, church, whatever it is.
Synagogue.
Synagogue, right. That was the basis for this whole separation of church and state thing. I mean, it's just absolutely ironic.
Right. From my point of view, I agree with him wholeheartedly. Religion is the bane of the existence of humanity. It's free practice and free, you know, the freedom to engage in it is an absolute that I will gladly, you know, die in support of.
Yep.
But it is, in my opinion, you know, a significant hindrance to society's ability to grow up.
Well, I think it's a serious hindrance on society's ability to think clearly. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, you know,
yeah. You have to be pretty strong in your reason to be able to say, this is what I believe in my faith. And then say, but over here in the world, in this society, that regardless of what my faith says, that I subscribe to personally, that I have to allow this, that, and the other thing. I mean, you've got to be pretty strong. Unfortunately, a lot of people can't think clearly enough to be able to divorce their societal role from their religious role.
Correct.
Yep. And that's a shame. That's too bad.
And I think that's a symbol of, and I believe it's a characteristic of adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, have you seen the new lib hashtag?
No.
I am a grown-up.
Oh, yeah.
I just laughed and laughed when I saw that.
Yeah. No sooner does the little kids at the six-year-old table say, I'm a grown-up!
Yeah, right.
Then everybody goes, yes, of course you are, dear.
Yeah, of course you are. Sit down and eat your vegetables now, please. Oh, Lord.
All right. So, let's... By the way, we had 23 archive and 25 live last week.
Wow. So, what do we have this week? Can you get in there yet?
I will throw this up. And I managed to avoid doing it. I didn't say a single word about yesterday. Isn't that amazing?
I noticed that. I wasn't going to say anything. Don't want to jinx it.
Six live.
Yeah, well, okay. I guess 19 folks decided that we weren't worth listening to again or something. Or they had better things to do this Tuesday.
I'm not going to worry about it.
Me either. As you have said before, and I agree with, I do it with zero listeners. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that isn't going to happen, but still. What the heck?
Yesterday was interesting.
Really? And that is because?
Well,
incidentally, happy
shitty.
Belated birthday.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The weather was shitty in the morning. It was supposed to thunderstorm here all day Sunday and all of Sunday night. Didn't. But the rain did show up on Monday, but it didn't show up. 5 miles to the north of us, drowned.
Oh, God. Yeah.
5 miles to the south of us, got really, really wet.
Yeah.
We were damp.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, I'd settle for damp right about now, let me tell you.
I went out the course around 10:30 and found that Kiwanis had taken the whole course over.
Oh,
and
boy.
They said I could go out on the golf course, but I had to be finished by 11:30.
Oh.
I was thinking, like, okay, I'm really good, but 50 minutes for 18 holes,
mm-hmm.
I'm not that good.
Yeah, yeah.
I have played 18 holes in 92 minutes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, done it. On a cart, by myself, yeah.
Well,
I can do it. Not a problem. And it actually only took me yesterday just a little over 3 hours to play when I did start playing. So I don't play slow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I finally got onto a course. I did some things first and then I went onto the course. And there was no one on the course. Nobody on the course.
Wow.
I didn't see, after I left the first tee, I didn't see anybody on the course for 7 holes.
Wow.
I didn't see anybody. Except for the people that were cutting the grass.
Ah, okay, sure.
Yeah. Monday is a normal day for most courses to cut their grass on Monday.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, because after the weekend, you know, they cut the grass and then it'll stay that way. I mean, the greens are cut, you know, every other day or even every day depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But the fairways and stuff like that are not necessarily cut, but maybe once a week or once every 4 days or so.
Got it. Okay.
So it'll be cut on Monday and Thursday if necessary. Anyways. I was playing okay starting off. I was, as I have most of the last year and a half, I was having to work pretty hard at it.
Mm.
You know, fat and old is starting to...
Yeah, right, exactly.
And I didn't play a bad front nine. 48 wasn't a great number, but... considered, all things considered, it wasn't a terrible number. I'd never played this course before.
Uh-huh.
So, it was, you know, new ground for me. And, you know, I felt okay. My problem was I was reading the greens to do everything but do what they were doing, which was nothing. And I expected with the rain that we had that things would have been slow. Boy, was that a mistake.
Oh, really?
Greens were not slow. Greens were like ice. And,
oh, man.
You know, my first couple putts were, you know, 18, 20 feet past the hole.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah,
all right, that's not bad. We're going to have work on that. But I made the turn, and I was playing okay. I'd had, you've never played, right?
No. I played once in a... in a charity thing locally here, first time I'd ever played, and it was you play the best ball and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. You know par 3, par 4, par 5?
Yep.
Okay. A green in regulation means that you got the ball on the green so that you could have 2 putts to get your par.
Okay.
So on a par 3, you hit your drive, and you're on the green.
Okay.
2 putts, par. On a par 4, drive, second shot, 2 putts, par.
Okay.
Par 3, it's drive, hit, onto the green, 2 putts, 5.
Right.
So a green in regulation is you're on in either 1, 2, or 3, depending on the length of the hole.
Right.
My goal when I'm playing golf is to hit 9 greens in regulation.
Hmm. Okay.
9 greens in regulations means that I should have a shot at birdie in 4 to 5 cases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't necessarily think that I should have a shot at birdie in all 9 cases, but when I'm playing really well, 7 or 8 is certainly a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which means if I play just bogey golf, 1 over, the rest of the holes, I should shoot in the upper 70s, 76, 77.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, in fact, what my goal is, to be 4 or 5 over par, and 9 greens in regulations will do that.
Okay.
Well, I had 7 greens in regulation yesterday.
Oh, my goodness.
And...
so your drive is...
Five of them came on the back side.
Oh.
And
that's usually where you tire out.
Right. And I noticed it on the 13th hole. I was tired.
Mm-hmm.
But on the 12th hole, 13th hole, something interesting happened. A very, very long time ago, I was in a competition. And the 17th hole, I came into that competition tied. 17th hole was a dogleg, which means it bends to the left. And at the corner of the bend was a big old huge oak that just hung out over the fairway.
Yeah.
And I turned to everyone and I said, watch. Okay. Now, to be perfectly honest, I was really confident that day. Extremely confident. And I was hitting the ball really, really well. Okay. And when I said watch, I did the equivalent of Babe Ruth pointing.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And I aimed right at that big old oak tree. And I hit a screamer 6 feet off the ground.
Oh, boy.
Going right at that tree. And, of course, everybody was going like, oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, wait for it. And about 100 yards before that tree, my ball started to lift.
Wow.
And it lifted right over that tree and landed on the far side of the fairway past the turn.
Hmm.
And first of all, they wanted to know what I did. And I said, well, I just set the ball back about an inch in my step. And what happens is, instead of the club head coming through the ball and lifting it up,
mm-hmm.
it was just barely on its downstroke. Okay? It was
mm-hmm.
still angling just a little bit down.
Okay.
But because the club face has a little bit of an angle to it,
mm-hmm.
the ball jumps straight out. But it has a touch of backspin to it.
Ah, and that's what got the lift.
And once the backspin stops, okay,
mm-hmm.
the ball will actually start spinning very fast forward.
Hmm.
It's like kind of a tire. It's going backwards, and then it spins
mm-hmm.
forward because the air friction really picks up on it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it does that, the ball lifts.
Hmm.
13th hole yesterday. Never been on this course before. Dogleg left, par 5. Big old hunkin' oak sitting out in the middle of that corner. Now I looked at it and said, okay, one, I can't hit you, I can't hit over there. I just don't. If I was hitting a 300 yard drive,
mm-hmm.
I could do it.
Yeah.
But I don't hit 300 yards anymore.
Right.
But I said, but just to show you that I don't give a shit about you, I aimed dead at that tree.
Yeah?
And ripped. Now, I know that when I rip really hard, if everything else is going right, my ball is going to drift to the right.
Hmm, okay.
And it went right at that tree and then drifted dead center in the fairway.
Cool.
Now the question was, did I hit it far enough to get around the tree? And the answer was, not quite.
Not quite.
Mm. I was about 98% of the distance that I needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, I'm going to put this really close to the tree. And if I do and hit it well, I'll still be in the fairway, but farther down. And I did, and it did, and I was.
Oh, good. All right.
My third shot, I left about 15 feet from the pin.
Uh-huh.
My putt stopped about 6 inches away, and I tapped it in for my par.
Cool.
Here's the funny thing about it was, the second shot,
mm-hmm.
I didn't grip and rip. I just relaxed. Didn't work for it, didn't try.
Mm-hmm.
Just gave it a good swing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now I wonder. And for the next 4 holes, that's all I did. And I picked up 25 yards more distance,
mm-hmm.
and I got my old accuracy back.
Cool.
And I birdied 2 out of the next 3 holes.
So you've been tightening up. So what you needed to do was relax.
Yeah, but
mm-hmm.
Here's the deal, okay? The swing has to be there.
Yes.
Okay? Everything else has to be right. If everything else is right, I can relax and then just bring the club through,
mm-hmm.
and everything
mm-hmm.
else will work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I haven't been able to do that 3 years.
Hmm.
But I did. I had two pars, two birdies on the backside, and five greens in regulation.
Wow.
It was, I birdied a par three, which was the 17th hole, which was just weird. I actually took two clubs out to the tee. I was going to hit the club that I wanted.
And if
it didn't turn out, I was going to hit the club that I thought maybe I should have hit.
Mm-hmm.
What I wanted to hit was a 3-iron, and I only had a 2 and a 4.
Ah, okay.
So I decided I was just going to hit the 2-iron and just do what I was doing before, which was just, you know, nice swing with through the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I only left it about 18 feet from the pin.
Wow.
I didn't even bother with the other club. Now, remember I told you that I was doing things and it wouldn't do it all day long?
Mm-hmm.
I was playing breaks, and it just wouldn't break. No matter what I did, it just wouldn't break. I just couldn't get it to turn. You know, it didn't need to turn. I kept leaving things left, right, left, right, left, right.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get anything to go. So on this hole, I said, fine. I'm going to do exactly what the green says, and I'm just going to hit this straight up. Well, I mishit it a little bit. I ended up about 6 inches outside the cup, which was an absolutely perfect place to be because I ended up dead center.
Hmm.
Ball went dead in, straight, perfect speed, everything uphill, no problem, birdie. Great. I'm sitting there looking at it going, you okay? The only other good thing was the 15th fairway. You don't watch golf, do you?
No.
Okay. The hardest type of fairway to hit is, imagine, okay, you know a fairway is like a runway, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Now imagine a fairway that has a big old lake on the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
For about 60% of the length, a big old lake on the side of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now that taunts people all the time. Most people that are comfortable with their game, they just ignore it because they're not going to go anywhere near it. It's not a big deal.
Right, exactly.
But it's a taunt. Okay. What golf courses do to make things a little bit more difficult is they put the tee offset to the fairway where you have to hit over the water and then land in the fairway that's running at a 40-degree angle to what you're hitting.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So if you go too short, you'll go through the fairway because you're going at too much of an angle to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go too long, that means, you know, if you try to cut it too much, you're going over a lot of water, and if it's not far enough, you're in the water.
Right.
So it forces you to pick a very specific spot. I hit the longest drive of the day on that hole, and I cleared the water at its longest distance.
Wow.
Didn't plan on doing that. You know, pulled it just a little bit, but I easily hit the longest ball of the day.
Wow.
On that hole. And then chunked up my second shot, and, you know, but was fine from that point. The whole point was I shot a 40 on the backside.
Wow.
Which, you know, paired with a 40 on the front side would have been damn good play.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't shoot 40 on the front side, but I'll put it this way. When I finished the 18th, I wanted to go play 9 more.
Amazing what a little success does for you, huh?
I wasn't tired because I stopped working so hard at it. I just simply got more enjoyable about it. It was a very good round. And by the way, the last 4 holes were in sun.
Oh, really?
It was sunny, nice little breeze, not real windy, you know, not dead air. It was hot, humid,
and
it was great. It was wonderful. I came off the golf course feeling really, really good about my game, really, really good about the day and playing. We went out. I had a very nice sirloin steak for dinner. They overcooked it just a little, but that was okay.
Yeah.
I like it medium rare, so it was almost medium.
Just a little bit too close to medium, yeah.
Had a nice dinner. We all went out. CJ, Victoria, and I went out to dinner. Then CJ and I took Victoria home, and then CJ and I went out and saw District 9.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You recommend
movie.
That?
No.
No.
Not to go see in the theater. I think it's something that's worth seeing if you like science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth seeing at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But no need to go spend the money at the theater.
Okay.
It's not that big of a big screen issue to do. It would do just as well on a smaller screen. I found it interesting. It was kind of fun to watch. Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. You know, to go off to the theater. Probably should have seen G.I. Joe, which was my other option. And then we went out and got Sundays afterwards, and then came home and found out that Gloop was gone.
Oh.
All in all, it was still a good day. It was
okay.
It was a good day.
Okay.
And for me, 99% of the time, if I have a good time on the golf course,
mm-hmm.
you know, the rest of the day is almost irrelevant.
Okay.
I like that.
You know, that's good.
And I wasn't certain I was going to be able to get out on the course early in the morning, and I was getting pretty upset about the idea that I wasn't going to get out.
One more day without golf,
No, I can go a whole year without playing golf, but if I don't play golf on my birthday, it really upsets me.
Yeah.
It really upsets me.
Yep.
Mentally, it's extremely important for me to play on my birthday.
Hmm.
After 25 years, it's become such an important process, such an important thing, that not doing it gets me, you know, upset.
Yep. Gets you to places you don't want to be. I can understand that one.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If I hadn't played golf yesterday, it would have been beneficial if CJ and Victoria had just simply not existed.
Yeah. Okay.
because I would not be useful to deal with humanity at all.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all.
Well, it's a and good thing you got to play then.
It is. It's really. It is. For my soul, you know, for my sense of sanity, yeah, it's really important.
Yeah.
Anyways, an odd thing happened. Now, you're going to have to explain this to me.
Okay.
This didn't make any sense to me. Okay. And this was done by a guy in about your age.
Okay.
Sixth hole, par three. Hit a nice shot, left it about 30 feet from the pin, got it on the green, nice, real good. It was my first regulation of the day. And there was a bathroom nearby. And I said, you know, I'm going to take advantage of this now. So I took the cart and I went over to the bathroom and I went into the bathroom. No sooner had I begun to relax, then my phone started ringing.
Your phone?
Which was out in the cart.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to answer it, and I'm not going to worry about it. You know,
right.
First of all, I'm not taking work calls. You know, so,
right.
You know, yes, I am taking work calls, but I'm not doing anything with them. I'm just saying, you know, talk to me tomorrow. And so I'm sitting there, and it rings, and that's fine. And so I finish doing what I'm doing, and I come back out, and there's this old guy standing next to the thing, and he's got a phone, and he goes, here she is, and he hands me my phone.
Jesus. Ah, okay.
And I look at him, I'm like, the fuck do you think you're doing?
I can tell you.
Tell me.
Guy my age, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? Think about when we grew up. Think about what society was like.
Yeah.
People helped people. It was just, I mean, wasn't even a thought about it. You just did. That's all. Just did. So this guy knows you're in the bathroom, and your phone is ringing. Well, most people want to take the calls that they get. So he answers your phone and says, gosh, you know, I'm sorry, she's busy right now, but if you just hang on a little bit, she'll be right here.
Oh, he told her I was in the bathroom.
Well, that was dumb. That was dumb. but I understand the impulse that made him do it. You bet. Absolutely.
Smiling like a Cheshire cat.
Yeah, you know, what can I tell you?
I went up to the, I took, dealt with the phone call, and, you know, he was long gone by that point in time.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm driving up to the green going, the hell do you think you're doing? The hell do you think you're doing? You know? And it was an effort on my part to try and get past the idea,
mm-hmm,
you know,
that somebody would answer your phone.
My phone.
Yeah.
This is what I have to say to you.
Okay.
If you're ever presented with that situation in your life,
yeah,
don't answer the damn phone.
I'll tell you what. I will go this far. If I am ever presented in that situation in my life and it's your phone, I won't answer it. I'll just let the thing roll over to taking a message. You know what? I would be willing to bet that guy walking down the street and a payphone rang, he'd answer it. Be willing to bet you. I mean, we're never going to know, but I bet he would.
He was just so proud of himself.
Yeah. Because he thought he'd done you a good turn, not knowing you or anything else.
Hey, all right. Sir.
No good deed goes unpunished, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now I have to sit here and do a petition.
Okay. Well, I will let you go to work then, and I'm going to climb back onto my computer and see if I can track down that blog thing that I read. I want to read it through a couple of more times, make sure I got it straight in my head.
Let's see. Do you know what Project 2996 is?
No, I don't. I've seen it referenced. I just don't know what it is.
In 2006 was the first time that they were doing it. They looked for bloggers to pick one of the people that died on 9/11.
Ah,
and
okay. Yeah.
Memorialize them on your blog.
Got it. Yep.
And
I knew that happened. I just didn't know that it had an actual name.
Yeah, it's called Project 2996. I did, and the person I did was first class cabin attendant Barbara Anganelli, who was on the first flight to go into the South Tower.
Ah, okay.
So probably, if not the first, she was either the first or the second person killed on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the earliest fatalities on 9/11.
Yep.
Nice lady, was not married, didn't leave any kids behind, left a long-term boyfriend behind.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I reposted it in 07 and in 08. They're looking to redo it again.
Hmm.
And they're looking for people.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
so I'm going to continue to do mine, and I've also suggested I take another one, too, but if they run short of people. Anyways.
And are they in danger of that?
I don't know. I only found out that they're having a problem with it over the weekend and said that I would be happy to participate. I would have done it anyways. I mean, I do her every, you know, I post
every
her every September 11th and had no intention of ever stopping, frankly. So
Is Project 2996, is that the name of a website also?
It is. It is project2996.wordpress.com.
Ah, .wordpress.com, okay. Okay. HTTP or www?
HTTP.
Okay. Cool. I will go look at them.
So.
How did you find out about her story? Who she was, what she was, about her life, etc.
I had to Google her, and there was two hometown newspaper stories. She was from the Boston area, and her family was originally from the Carolinas, if I recall correctly offhand. And both towns had stories. From slightly different perspectives, you know,
sure.
One hometown girl, one, you know,
yep.
from, you know, the fact that she was in a tent and stuff like that.
Right.
So I was able to get a fairly good idea. And I did not get a link, an email to her family and stuff like that until after the fact. And then I just got a very nice thank you.
Oh, how cool.
I never followed, I said, someone that I would have probably enjoyed meeting, happy to do it, important never to forget. And,
right.
That was the extent of our conversation.
Huh.
My intent was not to get, into the family or anything like that.
Well, sure.
Was,
right. Yeah.
So it was there. But, that's what all it is, you got to do a little bit of digging, to find the stuff that you need to. Some cases there's more than others.
I would suspect that in some cases there's not a whole lot.
Right, and some of the cases were just as simple, one paragraph memorial and that was it. I was able to get a picture, and, a little bit about her family, a little bit about her boyfriend.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
How cool. And is that on Moderate Mainstream or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll go back
in your archives.
Yeah. If you go on September of 06, you'll find it, or September of 07 or September of 08.
Yep. Cool.
It's there.
I will take a look. You betcha.
So.
Cool.
All right.
All righty, kiddo. Have a really great week.
You too.
All righty. Thanks.
How's your lady? Okay.
Yeah. She came home sick, and she was probably a day early. They were getting ready to wrap up that fire, but she got one of her migraines. So she had to get driven home. It was like, oops. But by the next morning she was. She was shaky, but okay. And today she's right back to where she was and looking to go on another fire. So it's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
You betcha.
Migraine, bad things.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. And, she gets them. They're mostly food-triggered, and she wasn't watching what she was eating. And it's like, oops. Well, yeah, that happens. She's had them long enough, and she knows what triggers them, so she's just got to make up her mind, no, she isn't eating a whole bunch of tomatoes, she's not eating a whole bunch of cheese, she's not eating, you know, all of those things that trigger it in her. And
No pizza for her.
Yeah, so she just has to, you know, make up her mind that, you know what, if I eat this, then I need to wait a week or so before I have it again. I can't be having tomatoes every day because they'll do her in every time. So, anyway, she's good.
All right, good.
You betcha.
All right,
okay.
Talk to you soon.
Right, bye-bye.